Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Happy New Year, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, you and I see most of the world taking a federal holiday today. But with the Iowa caucuses on Tuesday, we are ready to go. We are tanned, rested, and ready, or at least, well, ready for the Iowa caucuses.
Every bit is equally pale and ready, yes.
Yes, exactly. So the good news today is that tomorrow, the votes finally start counting. It was about this time a year ago we started to hear about debates as early as March and April that the supposed frontrunners at the time didn't even bother to show up for, and it just seemed like it was going to be a tedious run-up, and in some cases it has, but I think the ups and downs of all the different shifts in who's leading in the polls and so forth has definitely made it a little more interesting. But the good news is that the votes finally count tomorrow, and hopefully we're one giant step closer to having a new president just a little more than a year from now.
In 36 hours, you will no longer have to worry about hearing someone say, "I think so-and-so will win Iowa because we will know who the winner is by, 10:52 p.m. tomorrow evening." Listeners to this podcast know I am not a fan of the Iowa caucus process. One thing that I think is good to get past the endless polling and the endless debates and to actually get, on with this decision. As somebody who is not, a fan of the Iowa caucus process, the sooner it gets into our rearview mirror, the better. The sooner we get past it, the better. One thing that I think is kind of the remaining X factor, we know that, look, there are six people who are effectively competing. Huntsman is, skipping ahead to New Hampshire. At this point, Romney and Paul seem to be going, neck and neck for first place. Santorum is coming up fast into a strong third. Gingrich has slipped a little, and he and Perry and Bachman are in that 4, 5, 6 slot. And the kind of question is, what order do they finish and who gets any delegates out of this? Conceivably, the sixth place finisher will be in a tough spot and need to have a strong, compelling argument to continue onwards. But I wouldn't be surprised if no one chose to drop out based on this. The one really intriguing measuring stick for me between now and Tuesday night is going to be, what is the turnout? The turnout in 2008 was 119,000 people. That was with a very competitive and very hard-fought Democratic primary going on the other side. It really should be higher than that, and it should be probably significantly higher than that. Those of us who are not fans of Iowa will find a much more compelling case if the turnout actually drops in 2012. Even with no Democratic contest going on the other side. So Iowa Republicans, show us what you got. Turn out, get the sitter, do what you have to do to be there. Because, if you're going to get all this attention, if you're going to get this enormous amount of resources and time and personal attention from the candidates, you might as well use it well. And we will presumably have some answers by the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch.
Yeah, you would think so. And I love the expectations game with this juncture with just 24 hours and change to go before people go to vote in these caucuses. Because on the one hand, you have Rick Santorum, who's the flavor of the week and surging at what you would think would be the perfect time for him in Iowa, saying, well, I have to do better than Perry and Bachman. And where the polls are right now, that's a pretty safe bet. Then you have Michelle Bachman saying, we're going to see a miracle tomorrow. So she's going to have to do something pretty impressive to get back to anywhere close to where she was at the Ames straw poll, which we talked about in the end of the year awards as potentially not having the clout it once had if she doesn't do relatively well, but we'll see.
If she performs an actual miracle, I will jump on the Bachman bandwagon. water into wine, any of that stuff, I will be behind her 100%. And look, being the foster mom for 23 kids, that's a near miracle by itself.
Right.
So, wait, can you tell who's taping this with kids in the background? My sons, having made a sterling appearance on the Bill Bennett show last week, have now decided that they want to make a little bit of noise in the background with the Three Martini Lunch podcast.
From national syndication to worldwide podcast, they are growing their media career by the day. On to Martini number two now, Jim. And this one may have gotten lost in the shuffle a little bit over the holidays, given the fact that people actually pay attention to far more important things than politics, but there are important things that do happen. And while the president was spending 7 hours golfing one day and spending time at a ritzy beach another day, and, he's on vacation, he can do that, although we're paying for it, he also requested that Congress once again up the debt ceiling by $1.2 trillion. Jim, wasn't that the amount the super committee was supposed to do? It just seems like just as soon as you think you're done with this, it's almost like the mob. Just as soon as you think you take care of the debt ceiling temporarily, they suck you right back in. And unfortunately, nothing's actually been improved since all this really happened in July and August. The can got kicked down the road a little bit. The super committee was a massive failure. And lo and behold, once again, we're cruising well north of $15 trillion in official debt.
You know, there's an old wives' tale that whatever you do on New Year's Day is what you'll spend the rest of the year doing. I don't think that's necessarily true, because if that's the case, most people would be hungover for the entirety of the year. Nonetheless, there's a certain argument, I guess you could say, that what you do around the holidays is what you really wish you could do. It's the time you do hopefully a little bit of time off, and you're spending time with your family. And so if you really like to shop, you'll go out shopping. If you really like to go out and to a sporting event, you'll do that. It's kind of we all get to do what we like to do. And the president, of course, got to go golfing. Got to go to talk about inequality and how Americans are struggling after staying at a luxury resort and going to the fanciest restaurants in Hawaii. And, of course, he got to raise the debt ceiling. This is what Obama likes to do, golf and raise the debt ceiling. It is kind of, it's an ideal holiday for the president. So we shouldn't be surprised that he would do something like this. Everyone had kind of joked that, were we going to finally get the Fast and Furious Inspector General's report on December 24th, it really was classic document dump time. So we have a slight improvement for the country in that America will start paying a little bit more attention. The holidays are over. And so the chances of really awful things trying to get slipped in under our noses will slightly decrease in the days to come. But again, this is the President Obama. So, it's not like we'll be getting good things in the week to come.
Yeah. Expectations remain low as they've been since the get-go, despite promises to have the oceans lowered and all peace and harmony be achieved between all peoples. Back to Iowa for martini number three now. And Jim, we constantly pick on politicians for pandering for votes, and things that voters really want from their candidates is authenticity. But in the case of Newt Gingrich, I'm not sure this is the best thing, because Newt Gingrich was asked a very simple question at a recent event in Waterloo, Iowa, and that simply was, what do you see as your biggest weakness? Here's Newt's answer.
My biggest weakness? Probably that I'm too reasonable and I should have responded to the negative ads 2 weeks earlier.
Jim, remember when you're in college and you went for the mock interviews and they say, what do you see as your biggest weakness? And they always tell you to say something like, well, I really work too hard. I put in too many hours. Yeah. And
I'm a perfectionist.
I'm too dedicated. Know, yeah. Yes. I don't let any mistakes fly by. And of course, nobody believes that. So, out of all the Newt Gingrich things that are in the closet, and the closet door has been wide open for a long time, the idea that he's too reasonable, I guess you can make a case for it. At least he's trying to. But that is his greatest weakness. He's staying true to character. I'll give him that. But it just shows that his head is still literally and figuratively the largest in the field.
One of the few intentionally funny things that President Obama has ever said was his assessment of these sorts of questions. Because apparently he got it a few times in the Democratic debates. And he would go first and he would say, well, I'm kind of sloppy sometimes. I'm kind of disorganized. My staff will tell you I'm always losing papers and stuff like that. Which, when you look at the performance of his administration, that seems somewhat plausible. The idea of the man who didn't know there was no such thing as a shovel-ready project, etc. Also, in the recent interview with Barbara Walters, he said, what is his flaw? What is his greatest weakness? He said that he's lazy. Now, I think Barbara Walters said, no, that's not true at all. Oh, you're leaving for your next golf round, Mr. President. I understand. So he would say, I'm disorganized. And then, of course, they would go to Hillary and John Edwards. And inevitably, the two would say, I think my greatest weakness is that I care too much, that I just get too filled with pain and ups. I get so upset when I see Americans struggling, blah, 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 blah. And he kind of, rolled his eyes and talked about how ridiculous these answers were. So it's a tough question to make. And we can all helpfully suggest other weaknesses that Newt Gingrich could have said. I'm actually going to give him a little bit of, he says, look, he's going to try to run a positive campaign. He wasn't going to run any negative ads. And then, of course, Mitt Romney and his super PACs are just barraging him. I saw one person's calculations that the average Iowan has seen 60 to 70 anti-Newt Gingrich ads in the past couple of weeks. So in this light, he's now going negative, and he's saying, I should have gone negative earlier. For a guy who's obviously given Gingrich a good portion of grief, I think that's a perfectly fair assessment. I think it's okay to go back on your only positive campaigning ad when you find yourself being, deluged the way he is. What I found fascinating is that in this, I don't know if it was in this particular interview or in some other recent interview in Iowa, he said, I'm going to hit back on Mitt. I'm going to hit back on Mitt on taxpayer-funded abortion in Massachusetts. I'm going to hit back on him campaigning as a moderate when he was running for governor of Massachusetts. And he basically lays out all of the messages and all of the criticisms he's going to lay out. Now, Greg, it's just me, but if I'm going to run negative ads against somebody, I don't say what those negative ads are going to be several days ahead of time. I'd like to have the element of surprise, and I'd like for them to be, you know, clicking through the channels somewhere up in New Hampshire and saying, wait, there are ads up in the air hitting us on abortion. There are ads, you know, showcasing us saying we're moderates, you know. But Newt Gingrich just has to blurt it out. He has to let us know what a brilliant tactician he is. And I don't know about you. If I'm on the Romney campaign, I'm already working on my pre-buttal ads or my response ads or something to, you know, I am buying up ad time in New Hampshire to not leave many slots available for Gingrich. So inability to control his mouth might be a better weakness. But, you know, if it makes Gingrich feel better to think of himself as just being just too darn reasonable in his endeavors, well, I guess he's entitled to come to that conclusion.
I guess so. We'll see if the people of Iowa find him reasonable tomorrow. Jim, look forward to talking to you tomorrow and getting back in earnest as we begin 2012 here. Have a great day.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.